There you go. There you go.
New rules. If you couldn't get into Harvard, get invited through your podcast.
Harvard, hello.
Look to science your right. Look to your left. Within a year, one of you people will have dropped out to found the next Uber for toilet paper.
Science Room D, are you ready for some a cappella singing? We are an a cappella group, the Positillions. We've been invited here to sing for you, and I hope you're ready. No, not at all. We are Chapo Trap House. Thank you for inviting us.
Before we start, we did have a list of rare slurs on the board, and a janitor did come in and finish it. And if you can find that brilliant mind, please tell us.
Let's do the roll call. I am Will Meneker.
I'm Brendan James.
Felix Biederman.
Amber Lee Frost.
Matt Chrisman.
Hey everyone, I'm Virgil.
And thank you, all of you, for joining us here tonight. We're here to talk about this August institution, Harvard University. We're going to talk about some recent news that's been cropping up about Harvard. We're going to dive into the history. But mainly, we are here to do the official... This is sponsored by the NCAA. It's endorsed by them, and it's legally binding. This is April Madness. We are here to determine once and for all who is the most evil person ever to come out of Harvard. A brief preface on the tourney. The rules are this is anyone associated with Harvard. They can be a faculty member, former president, wink, medical school, law school, school of government, graduate school, anyone tainted by this institution. But in no way, you people obviously are not evil. You're not included in the bracket. And some of them we think are very clear who's going to win the matchup, and we will decide it. Others we will throw open to audience participation because we just think it is too fucking close. I mean, there's a lot of evil people here, and it's very hard to determine some of these matchups. So we're going to rely on sort of a straw poll audience participation for some of them. Now, to begin, I'd like to talk about something that's been in the news recently. This is an article that was in the Crimson from April 7th of this month, and it's about the hot button issue of free speech on campus. Very controversial as of late. I'm just going to read now from the Crimson article. It says here, amid a nationwide debate about the status of free speech on college campuses, a new undergraduate group has vowed to test the limits of those values and invite what some say are hateful speakers to campus. Recently formed, the Open Campus Initiative espouses, quote, support for freedom of thought, speech, and association. So far, the group has invited widely criticized right-wing speakers to campus through its president, Connor Healy, class of 2019. He said they hope to invite liberal speakers as well. So far, guests have included Jordan Peterson, a psychology professor at the University of Toronto who claims that gender nonconformity threatens free speech. They have also invited...
He spoke in this very hall, according to that sign over there.
Yeah, look, I didn't want to tell you guys, but I was his opening act. Sorry.
They have also invited Charles Murray. Spoiler alert, we will be discussing him later. But Connor Healy says of this, we're a group on campus that expresses support for freedom of thought, and we think one great way of doing that was rather than promoting that on campus is by holding speaking events that other groups are unwilling to have. So I just want to begin by thanking Connor Healy, class of 2019, for inviting us here today, not because of our podcast, but because of a far more important mission that we're now here to espouse, which is the Jared Fogle Innocence Project.
Guys, something big happened today. Aaron Hernandez, the unjustly accused, he got free. And I remember when I started the Fogel Innocence Project. Someone said to me, "Yeah, buddy, when pigs fly, when Aaron Hernandez gets off, who's fucking laughing now?"
Just a slight point of clarification, he is still serving a life sentence for the original murder he was convicted of.
He's been acquitted of over 50% of his murders.
Yeah, and I mean, one murder, that's barely any murder.
Shit, dude. It's like how you have 1 year out of your life where you don't have to pay taxes. You have one murder.
I mean, you have to have a learning curve.
Yeah.
So, again, I just want to thank Connor Healy. That's that name again, Connor Healy, class of 2019.
He actually...
For inviting the Jared Fogel Innocence Project to come speak at Harvard when other universities deemed us too controversial.
Little known fact, he's actually the scion of the Healy shoe fortune.
Connor actually transferred to Harvard from Penn State after an unpleasantness.
Guys, if you're interested in what we're doing here at the Fogel Project, and you want to donate, and you want to reach a higher level of membership, if you donate $10,000 a year or more, you are part of the Gary Glitter Society, our highest ring of supporters. So, see me
though, you can simply do it at a level you can control, the $5 foot long.
But, you know, there's another, something else going on currently at Harvard, another figure that's actually not in the bracket, but I think warrants a mention at the top of the show. And I'm going to turn it over to Felix now to talk about this fellow.
Guys, in our lives, we meet people that are special, that touch us in a way that, you know, it doesn't matter if we've never met them. It's like people feel this about J.K. Rowling. They feel this about Jared Fogel. They feel this... I feel this about a guy who's at your institution. Now, you guys here, you have something called the Belfort Center. The Belfort Center, you may look at it, look at the people they have there. They have their Ash Carters, et cetera. But then they have a lower rung of people that are named fellows there that don't really do anything. They've never done anything. But you look at it more and you're like, oh, they just seem to be related to powerful tyrants. And they don't seem to research anything or write anything. And this seems to be something where Harvard is just buying influence with powerful people. But you would be cynical and wrong. Because my friend, like the Yellow Wolf song, Best Friend, Nawaf Obeid. Now, some may call Nawaf Obeid, newly named fellow at the Belfort Center at Harvard, they may call him a manlit Saudi propagandist who got shit-canned by the Saud family, and now Harvard just pays him money to gain access to the royals and, you know, maybe link up donors who are defense contractors, some evil shit like that. That's wrong. But if you see Nawaf, just, you know, tell him you're familiar with his works. Tell him... He knows I'm a fan. Tell him I said hi. But he's not in the bracket, but he is a very honorable mention. Honorable mention for an honorable man. My friend, Nawaf Obeid at the Belfort Center. You can run into him anytime here.
Going from a current fellow, I think we'd like now to go back in time to some early history of Harvard. Again, these are people not in the bracket, but they warrant a mention. And just imagine these people are, their jerseys are being raised up to the rafters. These are a couple all-timers, and I'm going to turn it over now to Matt to discuss two of these gentlemen.
We just want to give a brief shout-out to some people who really set the standards by which everybody on this board has striven to reach. And we're going to start off with a guy, like, first-generation Harvard graduate, a real cornerstone of the institution, Cotton Mather. And obviously it's like, what did he do? He's not that bad compared to a lot of people, but he is the model for the public intellectual, the wonk or academic who advises politicians on how to kill people in a way that, you know, seems the most righteous. His main claim to infamy is that during the Salem witch trials, he sent a letter to the judge advising him that, yeah, you can use spectral evidence. Go ahead. See what happens. Which then led to the deaths of 20 people. Whenever I think of, you know, Jeffrey Goldberg or somebody like that going to the White House and Obama going, what do we do about this intractable Middle Eastern situation that we can't seem to get our heads around? And he just goes, have you tried bombing them? When I just imagine Cotton Mather in the times like that, because he really set the gold standard for what that means in America. And also, even worse crime, frankly, is he was a very significant advocate for smallpox inoculation in Massachusetts colony, which, of course, led to hundreds of colonial children becoming obsessed with horse carts and hooping sticks.
It was spectrum evidence.
Yes, he is spectrum evidence.
That's actually why the Opium War started. Their parents had to go to the Near East to retrieve cartoon scrolls for them.
And so if we're giving big ups to Cotton as one model of an evil Harvard alum, another model would be a guy who combines two of the greatest strains of Harvard evil graduates, race scientists, and guys with goofy-ass names. And I'm referring, of course, to Lothrop Stoddard. That's right, Lothrop Stoddard. The man who is most famous for writing the book, The Rising Tide of Color Against White World Supremacy, which was a nationwide bestseller in the first decade of the 20th
Available
century.
Available in the Harvard bookstore and gift shop?
Yes. He's actually name-dropped in The Great Gatsby as an expert on race science. He also, at one point, debated in 1929 W.E.B. Du Bois on the inferiority of black people, which makes him not only a horrible race scientist, but also, even worse, a debate pedant. He also spent time in Nazi Germany at the end of his life. He was a journalist there where he wrote glowingly of the Nazi forced sterilization program. At one point, arguing in favor of the courts that were administering it by saying the legislation was, quote, being administered with strict regard for its provisions, and if anything, judgments were too conservative. And the law was weeding out the worst strains in the Germanic stock in a scientific and truly humanitarian way. So another great tradition that Harvard has carried on, humanitarian intervention.
And if you do get a chance, look him up. I have to say that were I not miscegenated with lesser blood, would. Most attractive race scientist you're ever going to see.
Wow, looks like the tolerant left finally showed up.
He's one of the few guys who made those giant early 20th century mustaches work. It's
and
true.
They pulled it off.
Yeah. And speaking of Nazis.
Yeah. We're now going to turn it over to Virgil, who is going to clue us in on the saga of one Ernst Hanfstaengel.
One of my favorite Harvard grads, Ernst Hanfstaengel? Stengel, I think? I'm going to go with Stengel. Has anyone heard of this guy? He comes from this noble institution. He came to Harvard. He attended Harvard in the 1910s, where he was a pianist, and he composed fight songs because you know, acid jazz hadn't been invented yet, and that was all people had to listen to. And in the 1920s, he visited Germany, where he happened to attend a speech by Adolf Hitler, where he said, "What Hitler was able to do to a crowd in 2.5 hours will never be repeated in 10,000 years. Because of his miraculous throat construction, he was able to create a rhapsody of hysteria. Hitler, what'd that throat do?"
That is how Hitler got the nickname Superhead.
He inculcated himself with Hitler's inner circle by playing Harvard fight songs, which Hitler loved.
This is my fight song.
From his
book. I'm sorry. Das ist mein Kampflied.
From, I think, Hanfstaengel's book. Hitler was fairly shouting with enthusiasm. That is it, Hans Dangl. That is what we need for the movement. Marvelous. And he pranced up and down the room like a drum majorette. Putzi wrote marches for the Fuhrer, including one that took the cheer, Harvard, Harvard, rah, 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 and turned it into the infamous Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil.
Yo, Adolf, it's your cousin, Marvin Hitler.
You know that new struggle you've been looking for? Well, listen to this.
If you don't hear this drop, this is not a real KulturKampf exclusive.
That's Bismarck. God damn it.
They were the same guy. That's one of my historical theories.
Even in the 1930s, people spread rumors that Hitler was gay, and Ernst was supposedly his gay lover. I believe the New Republic accused him as such. But Ernst did have a wife, as did Hitler, actually. And in after the beer hall putsch in 1923, Ernst says that Hitler was so disconsolate that he was on the verge of suicide until his wife talked him out of it.
Are we sure that she wasn't an evil time traveler sent back to save Hitler?
Later on, they had a falling out sometime after the Night of the Long Knives. I'm reading from Wikipedia here. In 1937, Hans Dangl received orders to parachute into an area held by the nationalist side of the Spanish Civil War to assist in negotiations. While on board the plane, he feared a plot on his life and learned more details from the pilot about the mission, who eventually admitted he had been ordered to drop Hans Dangl over Republican-held territory, which would have meant almost certain death. The pilot eventually landed on a small airfield after claiming an engine malfunction following a brief talk, which allowed him to escape. This version of the story was related by Speer in his memoirs, who stated that the mission to Spain was an elaborate practical joke concocted by Hitler and Goebbels designed to punish him after he displeased the Fuhrer by making adverse comments about the fighting spirit of German soldiers in combat.
This is also that's also Trump's plan for Jared Kushner, by the way.
So when people say, like, I don't know, Hitler had some good ideas, they're talking about the TV show Practical Jokers. He invented that.
And in Hitler, Hans Dangl fell out with the Fuhrer, came back to the United States. In 1974, he attended his 65th Harvard reunion, where he regaled the Harvard University band about the authors of various Harvard fight songs. His relationship to Hitler went unmentioned.
Person who traveled the farthest amount of distance to be here tonight. Person who has collaborated with the most amount of world historical mass murderers. Ernst, it's you. So, can you believe that? You must have heard the Harvard fight song many times before, but did you originally know that the title was I'm Gay for Hitler? So every time you're cheering at a Harvard sporting event or feeling any kind of pride about the institution, that was originally what it was supposed to inspire. So, what do you say, guys? That's the preface. You want to get into this? This dang tournament?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Before we do, we're gonna play you in. We're gonna play you in with Sieg Heil, Fair Harvard.
I'm Gay for Hitler. Remix.
Okay. There we go.
All right.
Get lights on them back there? Well.
So yeah, welcome to the thundering dullard hour.
All right, let's kick off this tournament. We'll see what happens. But like I said, we have four regions, the first of which is the war criminal region. There are, again, like, you know, This is sort of like, we didn't go with the full 64. This is a 32 person tournament. I mean, it would just be too long at 64. Look, this is not, I want to stress, this is not a completist version of all of the evil people that came out of Harvard. We'd simply be here too long.
Oh yeah, dude. Hero.
Jenny Iglesias.
Hey, Iglesias.
Some of these names may look familiar to you. Some of these people will be very, maybe known to you personally. Maybe you're in their dorm room right now. You're going to go home. Okay. So to kick off the war, there are eight seeds in each region. And to kick off the war criminal region, we're going with a guy. I mean, this is the Duke, really. This is a perennial all-star.
This is the overall number one seed, let's be honest.
Overall number one seed in this bracket, Henry Kissinger.
If you're looking for any elite category, like triple double, as in three illegal bombing campaigns in one part of Asia, you got this guy. This guy is Michael Jordan of genocide of this.
Now, for each one of these contestants, we're going to try to get like a brief rundown of the crimes, what got them into the tournament, and their punishment for being in the tournament, which is, like I said, legally binding. So Henry Kissinger, I mean, this guy, we don't need to labor too long because, let's just run it down here, tanking the Paris peace talks for Richard Nixon while he was working for LBJ, prolonging the Vietnam War, Cambodia, Laos, East Timor, Chile, Bangladesh, Indonesia, probably a whole bunch of other shit we don't even know about. But basically, this is a top-tier, all-world mass murderer. And as far as his punishment, you know, this one is actually the most difficult one to come up with because I couldn't think of anything really witty. So let's just say eaten by a pack of starving dogs, maybe kicked out of a helicopter into a volcano, or just looking like he does now, maybe. So that's Henry Kissinger, the overall number one seed, number one in the war criminal region.
I'd like to make a late addition to his punishment.
Go for it.
He is reanimated every time he dies and has to go on Morning Joe for every morning for the rest of his life.
Okay, number two in the war criminal region, Elliot Abrams, class of 69. Nice.
Strong eyebrow game.
Now, I feel like this guy is maybe not quite as well known as Henry Kissinger, but this is like a UNC type figure in the war criminal bracket. Crimes include aiding and abetting genocidal death squads in Nicaragua, El Salvador, Guatemala, also involved in Iran-Contra. He basically never went away, came back in 2002, was in the George W. Bush administration, and tried to pull off a coup against the government of Venezuela in 2002. He is also the son-in-law of Norman Podhoretz and Midge Dekter.
Midge Dekter. The sound of your intestines going inside out and onto the floor of your bathroom. Midge Dekter. Yeah. You know, the thing about him is that he is really, you know, yeah, not that flashy, but he's like a Hank Aaron type guy. Like, year by year, the numbers aren't going to be too crazy. He's not going to hold the record for anything. But the production, year after year, it's metronomic. It's incredibly consistent. Yep.
He never did any, like, you know, Kissinger, he does the tomahawk slam dunks. It's the bombing in Cambodia. It's the helicopters going over the ocean. But this guy is just grinding. He is filling Salvadorian ditches full of nuns. He's putting in the work.
He's referring to, he helped cover up the El Mozote massacre in El Salvador of at least 800 unarmed peasants by the Salvadoran government in 1981. He's also married to a lovely woman who has called Palestinian children, quote, devil's spawn. He also, in Guatemala, he said of, quote, the mass killings done by Rios Montt's regime, quote, we've brought considerable progress on human rights issues in Guatemala's. And when the New York Times published an op-ed challenging the official State Department count of the mass murders underway by a woman who had witnessed a death squad-style assassination in broad daylight in Guatemala City without ever seeing it mentioned in the press, Abrams lied outright in a letter to the editor, even citing an imaginary story in a non-existent paper to insist that the man's murder had in fact been reported.
So that is the type of stuff a lunch pail player does.
Yeah. He's writing fake letters to the editor to come up mass murders in Central and Latin America.
But this is also a man that knows his audience. He testified before Congress about Christians being... the mass worldwide persecution of Christians, which, of course, he used to justify Israel, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And he would know about the persecution of Christians, at least personally in El Salvador.
Indeed. Yeah, sometimes you got to see for yourself.
This guy, his punishment, The chainsaw scene from Scarface. Or, Amber, you suggested one as well.
Yeah, I mean, we could just give him what he wants and literally crucify him.
Moving on, number three in the war crimes region, Frank Carlucci. This is another, like, underrated figure. He's a Harvard Business School MBA, but he's sort of a like a Zelig figure who's been at the intersection of U.S. Cold War policy and like private corporate power throughout his entire career. He's held a wide variety of posts all over the U.S. government and intelligence community, and over the length of his career, he's been given the affectionate nickname Spooky Frank Carlucci after his many years of service to the devil.
One of his many crimes is that doesn't even rhyme.
Yeah. To me, Carlucci is kind of like a Ray Allen type player. If you are trying to assassinate a leftist leader and you just can't get it done, Carlucci comes in the last minute and clutch.
You know, originally it was Big Pussy Carlucci, but...
Yeah, probably most famous for as the second secretary in the U.S. Embassy in the Congo during the time and reign and the consequent assassination of Patrice Lumumba. Carlucci was intimately involved in the U.S. efforts to overthrow his government. He helped carry out that assassination in 1961 and then moved on just a few years later to oversee the coup of the Goulart government in Brazil by a right-wing military dictatorship. That was just a few years after what he did to Lumumba. So, Matt...
Daggers from half court.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Matt, you want to go over the punishment for Carlucci?
Yeah, just that his personal physician will be Dr. Sidney Gottlieb. Google it. He was the CIA's, basically, Mengele, who sent a toxin-laced handkerchief to be given to Lumumba in 1961 before he was later more inelegantly beaten to death by Belgian special forces.
Moving on, in the four seed, this guy I'm sure you're familiar with, George W. Bush.
Crowd favorite.
Yeah.
I know that we all think he's woke now. But
again, no need to spend too much time on George W. Bush. We're all familiar with his crimes include, of course, Iraq, Afghanistan, the entire war on terror, torture, and also, of course, 9/11.
And let's not forget Bushisms.
Yeah. It's that Daily Kush shit.
Yeah.
We're back.
His punishment is that he has to do oil paintings of all his Iraqi victims until he dies. In the number five spot, Barack Obama. What? Why are you laughing? Why? I don't get why that picture's
friend,
funny.
Our friend Sid gave us these pictures.
I hear he just wears that every day now that he's not president anymore. He finally gets to be comfortable.
It's comfortable.
Again, no need to belabor the point too much. We're all familiar with him. Crimes including, you know, drone war, prosecution of whistleblowers, his just generally weak and feckless presidency that accomplished almost nothing, and inaugurated a wave of cynicism and hopelessness that led us directly to Donald Trump. His punishment? Okay. Really, sir.
No, Obama never did things like turn the fucking Yemen into the fucking Swiss cheese. He never refueled Saudi jets as they fucking triple tap funerals in Sana'a. He never did any of that.
He's got a lot to answer for, but his punishment will be whatever Sharia law dictates. Coming up next, Robert McNamara. A classic. Again, this one, Vietnam, basically. He took the business acumen he learned at business school here and applied the metrics of success that he learned running the Ford Motor Company and applied them to mass murder, making body counts as the official metric for success in the Vietnam War. His punishment will be leaked Errol Morris footage a cutting room floor of him taking a shit. Number seven, Paul Bremer. He was the, of course, official manager of the U.S. occupation in Iraq, sort of the American viceroy. We're using this image because, of course, his decision to preside over the disbanding of the Iraqi army arguably led to the creation of ISIS now.
Bremer was quoted as saying, when God closes a door, he opens a window.
Bremer's punishment, he gets his old job back, but now. Number eight was a big new Brzezinski. Sort of this is like a mini Kissinger, sort of the Democrats' answer to Hidden Kissinger, who is in a lot of ways...
He's the Hydrox to Kissinger's Oreo.
Yeah. He was, in a lot of ways more hawkish towards Russia. He hated Kissinger's policy of detente, but probably made the list here for his, role in the Afghan war and in the creation of the Taliban. We're going to read here from a quote that Zbigniew gave about his arming of the Afghan rebels to fight Russia. He said, "That secret operation was an excellent idea. It had the effect of drawing the Russians into the Afghan trap, and you want me to regret it? What is more important in the world history, the Taliban or the collapse of the Soviet Empire? Some agitated Muslims or the liberation of Central Europe and the end of the Cold War?" Boy, I hope that quote never comes back to bite him in the ass.
Brzezinski is also on the list for his creation of the screen door nuclear submarine.
It's a big news punishment. A daughter that marries Joe Scarborough. That's it for the war crimes region, but we actually do have two honorary mentions here. One is Bibi Netanyahu, who did take a class here. I don't think he was official. I don't know, quite made it.
He audited something. It was bullshit.
We disqualified him. Yeah. We wanted him in, but he clearly didn't want it bad enough.
No.
Yeah.
He did a paper with like really wide margins, like 16-point font.
Double space.
Not good enough for us, buddy. Get out of here. Yeah.
And also Samantha Power, who's just been appointed to a new, I think, joint teaching at the JFK School of Government and the law school. So Samantha Power, back in town, a professor from heck. But no, I just think it's funny. Like, Samantha Power had the unique position of, like, you know, writing her whole career about the problem of, like, you know, war crimes. And, of course, none of any of these people we've talked about have actually done. But then in her role as UN ambassador, had to basically spend every day going, yeah, everything I've written about, that actually doesn't apply to Israel.
Okay, so we got to do the bracket, right?
Yeah,
so
now we're going to have our good friend Tim Faust come up. And a friend of the show, you might have heard him. You might have heard him.
Our very own Vanna White.
You might have heard him on a recent episode where he expertly walked us through the perils of American healthcare, and he's here now to just help
I
us
bet
out
you did not think he wore a bandana when you listened to that episode.
Tim Faust, or as I first referred to him before I knew his actual name, every single one of my high school boyfriends.
All right, so what do we think here?
Okay, so in the first, you know, the one seed versus the eight seed, this is Henry going up against Zbigniew, you know, the big foreign policy guys of the Republican and Democratic administrations. But you know what? This is not a contest. This is chalk
easy,
here.
This is Mighty Ducks versus Mighty Ducks 2.
any crime that Kissinger did, or any crime that Brzezinski did, Kissinger also participated and then has three more illegal bombings or something like that.
It was all like, it was just hold my beer after hold my beer.
Easy.
So, Tim, could you put Kissinger in the next round?
Thank you.
Brzezinski will be taking a manned rocket mission to the sun. I have a lot of Polish jokes. I grew up in Chicago.
Okay, in the second matchup, we have Elliot Abrams against Paul Bremer. This one's kind of tough.
Two Bush guys. I think that...
Well, this is basically... What is this? This is like... this is Iraq versus
Central America,
if you want to like reduce it down.
Sure.
Ooh.
I don't know.
So
I
got to vote for Bremer. We're still in the midst.
We are still in the midst of the Iraq. Well, the Iraq thing is the issue. But we also have George up there. We have George W. Bush also for Iraq.
Iraq is represented.
Yeah, maybe we want to. And the thing is, and here's the real thing. Abrams was in fucking Iraq too.
I know, that's what I'm
saying. He was like, literally, when the Sunni insurgency started, he was knocking on the door of the White House going, have you tried death squads?
Yeah. Do we want to toss this one up? See,
what do you guys say?
Yeah. All right, let's see here.
Okay,
we'll do
so
round of applause.
Hands up for Elliot Abrams.
Okay.
All right. Wow. Bremer?
Paul Bremer?
That's close, but you got to give it to Abrams.
It's
close, but that's more chalk.
A lot of Ron Contra fans in the audience. Very good taste.
All right.
Okay. Next up, Frank Carlucci versus Robert McNamara.
See, this seems like it's pretty clear. You need McNamara.
It's McNamara.
But Carlucci is such a flashy player. Like, he does... Yeah, look,
McNamara.
He may not have the numbers, McNamara. He may have...
That's true.
That's a good point.
All the more reason to put him up there.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Here we go.
Beautiful.
Bush versus Obama.
Now this is the one. This is the matchup we've all been waiting for.
A couple of two-term titans here.
Our last two American presidents, George W. Bush versus Barack Obama.
Literally, our last two American presidents.
Now, I don't mean to, you know, disappoint someone who thinks our analysis is shit. I'm sorry, you know.
He tried his best. You try working with John Boehner.
But, you know, maybe not to disappoint, maybe, you know, bring back one member of the audience. This one's Bush.
Obviously.
Come on.
Not that big a thank you.
Come on.
In the competition.
You're just getting cute if you try to argue that Obama's worse.
In the competition.
Well, actually.
Yeah, that's.
In the competition between the fake bumpkin and the gay Muslim, one side of bodies weighs far more.
Yeah.
Congratulations to President Bush.
If you say Obama, you're like one of those people who says, my favorite British invasion band is Herman's Hermits. Good for you.
My favorite Christmas movie is The Act of Killing.
So in the round two, okay, here we go here. Round two, Henry Kissinger versus Elliot Abrams. Now, yeah, this is a Duke UNC style matchup. Yeah.
They both have longevity in their favor.
Yeah, but again, I'm sorry to do this, but this is chalk all the way. Henry's taking it.
Easy.
All right, so this literally is Vietnam versus the Iraq War.
Yeah.
Body count higher in Vietnam.
Much higher in Vietnam.
Yeah.
But body count, should that be the only metric?
Well, by McNamara's stance, he should win.
Yeah. But the Iraq War is still ongoing nightmare.
So is Afghanistan.
That's true.
Yeah. Again, it's W.
Yeah, it's probably got to be
yeah.
W.
Yeah.
So in the final round
ripping
of,
over his dick into greatness.
The final round.
A guy who's for whom Harvard was his safety school after he was rejected by the University of Texas Law School. That's true. I'm sorry, it was. Deal with it.
All right, should we throw up this last one to a vote? I mean, this is tough. I mean, like, at this stage of the tournament, you know, everyone deserves it. You know,
I think we should throw it up to the audience.
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
So let's see.
All right, let's see a show of hands for Henry taking this bracket. Oh my God! Don't even vote again. Yeah.
Winner by a claim.
Landslide, dude. This. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We bring Kissinger on there.
Tim's writing is so fancy and.
All right, that's one down.
That's one down.
Yep.
That actually is how Kissinger signs his stuff, is with a little heart on the eye. It's really out of character.
That's also how W signs his stuff.
Moving on to region number two, the robber baron / political dynasty region. This is a good one. Kicking off. This region, the number one seed, former Harvard president Larry Summers.
Is this your homework, Larry?
Did a girl
do this homework for you, Larry?
This is a guy who, in his various guises as like chief economist of the Clinton or Obama administrations or the World Bank or whatever, is a guy whose economic policies are so bad, he very well could be included in the war criminal region. But it wouldn't be fair not to keep him out
of
this.
Yeah, it wouldn't be fair to the real hardcore war criminals who got up every day to do war criminal crimes on purpose.
Lunch
on
purpose. War criminals,
You don't get credit for accidental war crimes.
No. But of course, you know, he helped loot the Russian economy after the collapse of the Soviet Union, presiding over the single greatest drop in life expectancy for a country since World War II.
Oops.
And then he packed up and came back to America and did pretty much the same thing here for the Clinton administration, working tirelessly during his years to undermine regulatory controls of our financial markets. He joined Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan and former Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin in basically making the world safe for derivatives trading and laying the foundations for the economic collapse of 2008.
Oops.
And also did plenty to sabotage any kind of decent policy in his role as Obama's chief economic advisor. Counseling against...
Can't do math.
He counseled against finger-pointing for in the assigning blame for the financial crisis.
I agree. Shit like the Nuremberg trials is just like pointless finger-pointing.
That was Callie's defense. Look, we can play the blame game.
In preparing for this one, though, I came across this memo written by Larry Summers when he was the chief economist for the World Bank that I want to share. This is just one paragraph from this memo that was leaked to environmental groups. Quote, "The demand for a clean environment for aesthetic and health reasons is likely to have a very high income elasticity. The concern over an agent that causes 1 in a million change in the odds of prostate cancer is obviously going to be much higher in a country where people survive to get prostate cancer than in a country where under 5 mortality is 200 per thousand."
So, you convinced me.
He's talking about outsourcing the poison created by rich countries to poorer ones because they live shorter anyway.
Look, different countries have different life expectancies.
Well,
and that's
we'll get
okay.
there. We'll get to him. We'll get to him later.
Hold on.
Hold off. Larry's punishment. He has to solve a complex math equation in time to stop a safe from falling on his head. Number two in this region, the Kennedys. We're using them all as a unit here.
Yep.
In better times.
Oh, wow.
Really? That's what offended you? Have you heard of them now?
You're just lucky these aren't gifts.
I don't know. Maybe we just have a lot of Volkswagen drivers in the audience.
No need to belabor this one too long. Just generally being the most overrated political dynasty ever.
Oh, God. They are the Joe Namath of fucking political dynasties.
The punishment? It's already happened.
Yeah.
Next up, Lloyd Blankfein. You probably know him as the CEO of Goldman Sachs. We know him as the greatest thief in human history, next only to perhaps Barabbas. He is the vampire squid currently sucking off humanity.
Well,
I wish.
You know, phrasing. You almost made him sound like a hero.
Punishment. His bank and organs are nationalized. Next up, Mark Zuckerberg.
He brings you love.
His crimes include Facebook, the fact that he's probably going to be president one day.
Yeah.
And giving Asperger's a bad name. His punishment, his browser history is made public. Coming up next, Michael Bloomberg. That's from The Onion. We can't take credit for
that. Yeah,
that's
The Onion.
Crimes include being worth $47.6 billion, and if I need to elaborate anything more, I don't think there's really a point, but also stop and frisk and just generally being the archetype of a nasally, imperious billionaire asshole who thinks he knows what's best for you. The good news about him is that he'll never be president. unlike perhaps Zuckerberg. His punishment? Every time he's photographed, it must be next to an average-sized adult.
Alternately, we could drown him in a 64-ounce soda.
Next up, Bill Gates.
That was my gag. I just want to drop in.
Virgil, you had some crimes Bill Gates was guilty of, right?
Crimes? Yeah. He created the greatest operating system that ever in human history.
Bill Gates, punishment? He gets cancer and goes to Steve Jobs' juicing doctor. Number seven, the Roosevelts.
Yay!
More shit analysis coming right up. Their crimes, the New Deal. Just kidding, folks. But, you know, they're pretty rotten, too. From TR, even
to beloved
Franklin. Oh, God, TR
is a CrossFit guy, yeah. Basically.
TR is the most annoying fucking... if TR is your favorite president, you have a sharp beard...
Or you're Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
That is her favorite president.
Yeah, because Elizabeth Warren, like everyone else who loves TR, is like an epic bacon person. It's bullshit. He sucks. Abraham, he wasn't even like the most combat-ready president. Abe Lincoln was a catch wrestling champion and would have demolished TR. Fuck him. I'm glad he's dead.
And let's not forget his son Kermit, who was instrumental in the overthrow of the Mossadegh regime in Iran, which led to, of course, the Shah coming back, and then the 1979 revolution, and in 2 years, nuclear Armageddon.
I gotta say, Kermit indirectly causing the glorious Islamic Republic, kind of a point for them.
Yeah, that's a point for them.
Kind of.
The Roosevelts, their punishment? Reincarnated as Kennedys. And last and not least, bring up the 8th spot in the Robert Barron region, David Rockefeller.
Ah! Whoa! Very, very sad year for us. This man passing on, the man who gave us permission to be weird. Yeah.
Give your blood to David.
Crime, I mean, again, no one...
Being a Lich King? Is that a crime?
No one that rich isn't guilty of something, but come on, just not dying on for so fucking long. Thankfully, his punishment is currently irrelevant because it's currently being doled out.
Yeah.
So that is it for the Robert Barron region. Let's break it down. Tim Faust, come to the stage.
Thank you.
Okay, first matchup. Larry Summers versus David Rockefeller. Again, I hate to be all chalk, but Larry's taking this, no
easy.
Problem.
He's still around, still grinding it out.
Yeah.
Larry Summers.
And I mean, all Rockefeller really did was just sit on a comically large pile of gold for his whole life.
Yeah. David Rockefeller did do his fair share of evil at Chase Manhattan, but that's like comparing a mass shooter to, you know, like an Apache helicopter blowing up a hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Apache helicopter is awesome.
And we agree. Larry Summers is awesome, too.
Next, we have a familial showdown. We have the Kennedys versus the Roosevelts, right?
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah, I got to go with the Kennedys. They almost caused nuclear World War III.
They've caused more deaths than the Tsarnaevs.
You know, in giving this to the Kennedys, I don't think we should also acknowledge the ones that are still around, like Patrick Kennedy, who's currently leading the anti-marijuana crusade, which he started after he got blacked out on Ambien and drove his car into the divider in front of Congress.
Okay, you judge, but whom among us?
Yes, but then you don't say, weed should be illegal.
There's also RFK Jr., who in his anti-vaccination campaign is destroying the future market for podcasts.
We literally saw RFK on a bus ad for a law firm, like a personal injury firm.
Yeah, you like.
No, not his. Like Murphy and Murphy, some like random bunch of guys. Like, does your child get vaccinated?
Oh yeah.
Does he love trains?
So like, whenever you read it, you hear it in the joke Quimby voice.
Yeah, of course.
All right, this is another Clash of the Titans. Lloyd Blankfein versus Bill Gates.
It's tough because Gates, I think, gets underrated because of his bullshit fake charity work. But, I mean, come on. Blankfein is a real Dracula.
And he does basically make policies, especially for healthcare in Africa.
Yeah. And he's intent on doing population control in the third world. He's in charge of the globalists.
He smells like sulfur, folks.
You ever get up close to Bill Gates? You ever get up close to Bill Gates? Smells like sulfur. He's got flies all over him.
Read the documents, folks. Just read them. I've read them.
By the way, Brendan's Alex Jones impression, very underrated.
Even yeah, he's great.
The canon of all of our
the
Alex
only
Jones
one of us
impressions.
That can do impressions.
Okay, this next one is super hard. This is like a blowout overtime fucking, yeah.
I have a strong opinion on this
one. Okay,
you do.
Mark Zuckerberg versus Michael Bloomberg.
It's Zuck, man.
It's Zuck.
Okay.
Zuckerberg. Okay.
Why? What?
Currently consolidating a bunch of fact checkers from legitimate news sources to bring fair and accuracy in reporting, but... Brought to you by Facebook. What could go wrong?
Okay. But
Facebook advocacy reporting.
If it wasn't for him, how would you find out that your stepsister wanted to play Candy Crush with you?
Yeah, I mean, you would never know that your cousin hates fake people.
Okay.
I want to bring up a point for Bloomberg, my man, one of the most powerful manlets ever in the world. Bloomberg is responsible for the Bloomberg Terminal, which. Helped flash trading a lot. It helped create the financial crisis, which led to Obama, which led to a delegitimacy crisis when he ate dog in the Oval Office. Bloomberg's crimes, everyone always looks at from when he was the mayor of New York, but when his time at Bloomberg, the company that he
also
invented,
naming it after yourself, very tacky.
Yeah, very.
He's a tacky hoe.
Yeah.
But again, it's more localized.
Okay.
I think we should put it up to the audience.
Yeah, leave
show
it up
of hands
to the audience.
For Zuck.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
It's fine. Zuckerberg.
Home. Yeah, that's home.
When she's
bias.
Sucking, you keep zucking. I don't know.
Check this out, guys. Dick Zuckerberg.
Awesome.
$54,000 a month for that.
Back of the net.
Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park. Okay. Larry Summers.
By the way, can we hurry up? Because I'm genuinely getting creeped out by David fucking Rockefeller looking at us.
Okay, real quick. Larry Summers versus the Kennedys. Summers.
Yeah.
Easy. Wow.
Next one. Oh, Lloyd Blankfein versus Ooh. Mark Zuckerberg.
Now this. Hold on a minute.
I want to hear the evidence.
This is a real Clash of the Titans.
Oh, God,
this is
like a,
Wall Street versus Silicon Valley. Cocaine versus Adderall. Using teens for sex versus using teens for your immortality potion. Like, these are the foundational, like, these are the two poles of evil in America. Yeah.
Shall we put it
And they're
the
both
audience?
At the height of their power.
Yeah.
We should. I mean, there's no way we can decide this on our own. So, show of hands for Lloyd Blankfein.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Ooh. Interesting.
Show of hands for Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh my God!
Oh, this is
that
like,
looked like a fucking tie.
No, that was
Lloyd
that was clearly
Lloyd
Blankfein.
Won.
Yeah, I think there was more
so?
For Lloyd, more for Goldman
what
Sachs.
What do we do? What do we do? A clap.
We can all agree that everyone brought their best game.
Yeah,
it's Lloyd.
Lloyd. Yeah.
That's correct.
Like I agree with you, but I lost.
Oh man, I had Zuck going all the way. Fuck.
Now you owe $100,000 to the bookie.
You're a degenerate fucking gambler, you know that?
Tell me you fucking gave the money. Just tell me you fucking gave the money. You banned the money.
I was going to give the money to these guys. Okay.
These people are too young.
God.
So
the only final matchup, Larry Summers versus Lloyd Blankfein.
All right. Well, this is like you've got the ideological architect versus the guy who actually made all the fucking money from the policies.
That's true.
Yeah.
So it's basically a tail wag the dog.
Over beneficiary, though.
I'm sorry. Cubono. Who benefits? Like, who is the architect of power? Who's the real architect of power in a capitalist society? It's the actual capitalist, i.e., Lloyd Blankfein. Summers is just his handmaiden.
Summers has such a hand in policy and also has shaped a million little mutants that he sent out from this very institution into the world. Yeah.
Summers has his own, like, slimers that come out of the folds in his gut. Summers also has way more bodies. He has way more bodies than Blankfein. I know we're not counting bodies like we were in the last bracket, but it's got to count for something.
I think so.
Are we going to... God fucking...
Are we going to be swatting the flies or doing something about the manure? That's the question.
Okay. The case has been made, but this one, again, we got to throw it up to the audience.
Yeah.
Can we get a show of hands for Larry Summers? Can we get a show of hands for Lloyd Blankfein?
Fuck.
Ooh.
Yeah. I think it's is Lloyd. Did that look like Lloyd to you guys?
Looked like a tie to me.
We got like round of applause, maybe.
Okay.
Round of applause.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Noise meter. Make some noise up in this piece for Larry Summers.
Now let me hear it for you, boy. Let me hear it from a boy, Lloyd Blankfein.
Wow.
All right. The people have spoken.
Democracy.
Very good work.
That is officially an upset.
Wow.
That's our first number one seed getting knocked off.
Wild stuff.
All right. Woo! Next up, the next region. The Wonk Pundit region.
I don't ask.
Leading this one off in the number one seed, we mentioned him already. Charles Murray, class of 65. Now, his crimes now probably most famous for popularizing bogus race science in his book, The Bell Curve. Perhaps lesser known is that his career began in a secret Pentagon counterinsurgency program in rural Thailand during the Vietnam War. This is a program that took anthropologists from America, and the stated purpose of which was to apply counterinsurgency strategies tested in rural Thailand to America's own restive inner cities and minority populations. Later, in a New York Times profile, we have mentioned this before on the show, but I'm going to do it again because it's too good. He bragged about his time in Thailand, saying of the time he spent there. I'm quoting from the New York Times. What then took place in Bangkok? Quite a lot, it seems, since his friends from those days still tell tales of Murray's barroom antics, one that he nostalgically repeats. Murray explained that he and a Peace Corps friend once sat for 12 hours at a place called the Patpong Terrace interviewing bar girls as they returned from their liaisons, taking all sorts of intimate notes about who did what that I don't care to repeat, Murray said. Murray also makes clear that he did more than take notes, though he theatrically objects to hearing the women described as prostitutes. Don't use that word, he says. They were women of the evening, courtesans. We liked them, and they liked us. In a lot of places, you had to woo the ladies, he continues. It involves money on the man's part, yes, but it also involves consensual relations.
So he was really the first PUA.
No, but this is the face of the man who thinks the stripper actually really likes him.
That incredibly flashy chrome dome, that's peacocking.
Now, here's another one, which I guess in our notes is referred to as the cross-burning incident. Which is
never a good thing to have on the old CV as a cross-burning incident.
Please never amend my Wikipedia to have an entry called the cross-burning incident.
Yeah, that's not a good sign. While there is much to admire about the industry and inquisitiveness of Murray's teenage years, there is at least one adventure that he understandably deletes from the story. The night he helped his friends burn a cross, they had formed a kind of
like you never did spring break.
Yeah. They formed a kind of good guys gang, the Mallows, whose very name, from marshmallows, was a play on their own softness.
Yes, that's it, the softness.
Yeah.
Not the color of a marshmallow.
In the fall of 1960, during their senior year, they nailed some scrap wood into a cross, adorned it with fireworks, and set it ablaze on a hill beside the police station with marshmallows scattered as a calling card.
Yeah, I'm in a gang.
Well, what are you talking about? These white hoods are dunce caps.
Rutledge recalls his astonishment the next day when the talk turned to racial persecution in a town with two black families. There wouldn't have been a racist thought in our simple-minded minds, he says. That's how unaware we were. A long pause follows when Murray is reminded of the event. Incredibly, incredibly dumb, he says. But it never crossed our minds that this had any larger significance. And I look back on that and I say, how on earth could we be so oblivious? I guess it says something about that day and age that it just didn't cross our minds.
That day and age was high school in 1960.
Look. It kind of defeats his entire, like, eugenics premise when he's like, no, I was too dumb to know how horrifically racist this was. And it's like, you have the skull for it. You should have known.
Okay, sure. He burned a cross, but people forget that he also burned a star, a clover, heart. I mean, it was just a coincidence, and you're going to talk about the cross. That's the only thing you're going to talk about.
Well, those are the marshmallows that are in Lucky Charm cereal.
Exactly.
Yeah. My favorite part of this story is his implication, like, oh, no, like, my town is too small to have racism. That's a big city thing. We did not have the money for that.
Charles Murray's punishment, skull measured with vice. Next up, number two. Bill Kristol.
Ooh.
His crimes, you know, God, just being an Iraq war boosting shithead who refuses to go away or die, generally being the smuggest prick alive, currently advocating for war in Syria and Iran. This guy just won't fucking go away. However, I would like to relate one story germane to Bill Kristol in this institution. This comes courtesy of the historian Ira Katz Nelson. He says, I remember in the late 1990s, Ira Katz Nelson, of course, is at Columbia, he came to give a guest lecture at Harvard. He described the lunch he had with Irving Kristol during the first Bush administration. The talk turned to William Kristol, then Dan Quayle's chief of staff, about how he got his start in politics. Irving recalled how he talked to his friend Harvey Mansfield at Harvard. Now, Harvey actually didn't make an... Is he still a professor here? How many people have taken his class on how to be an alpha male? That is the name of the class, right? The Art of Manliness? What is it? I don't know.
Isn't that a Maddox book? The Alpha Manliness? That's a lot cheaper to go into Harvard, just buy the book.
Harvey Mansfield could be on this list, but he's on this list via Bill Kristol. Okay, so Irving talked to Harvey Mansfield at Harvard, who secured William a place there as both an undergrad and graduate student. How he talked to Pat Moynihan, then Nixon's domestic policy advisor, and got William an internship at the White House, how he talked to friends at the RNC and secured a job for William after he got his Harvard PhD, and how he arranged with still more friends for William to teach at Penn and the Kennedy School of Government. With that, Professor Katz Nelson recalled, he asked Irving what he thought of affirmative action. I oppose it, Irving replied. It subverts meritocracy. Bill Kristol's punishment? Dropped from a stealth bomber onto an Iranian centrifuge. Number three, Niall Ferguson, the Lawrence A. Tisch Professor of History. No more? He's at Stanford now? Oh, fuck. Well, he used to be the Lawrence A. Tisch, so close enough. His crimes are writing a series of atrocious history books, the sole purpose of which is to portray the many Holocausts of the British Empire as right and proper, and just generally being just fucking insufferable. I can't look at a photo of this guy or hear him talk without just wanting to fucking rip my eyes out. I'm quoting now from Niall's most recent two-volume biography of Henry Kissinger. And by the way, when you're number one powerhouse seed, Henry Kissinger's personally chosen biographer, that should be a good indication. This is what Niall writes. Arguments that focus on the loss of life in strategically marginal countries, and there is no other way of describing Argentina, Bangladesh, Cambodia, Chile, Cyprus, and East Timor, must be tested against this question. How, in each case, would an alternate decision have affected U.S. relations with strategically important countries like the Soviet Union, China, and the other major Western European powers? The U.S. won the Cold War, which means that the burden of proof is on critics to show how different policies would have produced better results. If that isn't enough for you, imagine his voice saying this sentence. How then are we to explain the visceral hostility that the name Henry Kissinger arouses?
I believe his answer to that question, from what I read of the book, was they hate him because they ain't him.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's what he says. It's like, look, the man was a sexual dynamo and a world-bestriding colossus, and people just, haters are just going to hate.
I mean, Kissinger was known for the secret bombing of the back walls. People always say, you know, like, you say you never see me at the club. Well, I never see you in Paris ruining peace talks and killing hundreds of thousands more Vietnamese people.
Niall's punishment. Amber, you had a good punishment for Niall. It was having to read one of his books. I suggested that he would be reincarnated as an Indian peasant living under the Raj, but both are equally bad. Next up. Bill O'Reilly.
Yep.
Bill O'Reilly. His crimes include driving an entire generation of old people insane through his TV show and endless series of books, but also all the sex crimes he did.
He is the reason that you cannot have a conversation with your grandfather at Thanksgiving.
Again, Bill O'Reilly's too much in the news right now. We all know him, so I'm going to move along quickly to his punishment. Virgil, do you remember which one we had for this?
Yeah, Al Sharpton takes him to the real Harlem restaurant that isn't nice or middle class.
Next up, Matt Iglesias, class of 2003. Again, no need to belabor this one too much. Just, I mean, the pictures kind of do the work here.
Crimes include that fucking suit.
Yeah. Original founding member of the Kings of Comedy, Matt Iglesias.
Matt Iglesias.
How many of y'all like means testing?
Matt Iglesias, who has listened to this entire episode wondering if he would be on it.
He made it. He made it, Matt. His punishment, of course, I mean, it's almost hack at this point, but subjected to the labor standards of another country. Number six. You guys are going to like this one. Ross Douthat. Woo!
Boss Ross!
I mean, we've done so much with Ross over the course of our show. This almost seems like... Yeah,
he's young.
He's a young gunner.
He's the youngest New York Times columnist ever hired, I believe.
Yeah, by the way, he is how old?
30, late 30s.
Yeah.
This is what being that does to you. It comes out on your face. It makes you look like
he's got a reverse picture of Dorian Gray in his attic. Yeah.
He is...
The guy in the painting is actually having sex.
Ross Douthat is the Doogie Howser MD of not prescribing birth control to women.
Ross skipped the handsome part of Orson Welles' career and just went straight...
He's been at the Parmesan wine level for a long time now.
Brendan, let's run that shit back.
This is from the Crimson, I believe. It's an article written about him at Harvard's own paper. When Ross G. Douthat tells you that he hopes to become one of the world's most prominent writers, you get a sense that he just might. He says, coming to Harvard, I now have a new sense of the power and success that is at our fingertips. I know I will be one of the 25 richest writers of the future, he says.
Douthat, you know, recalls, he probably is. He probably makes $60,000.
Well, we talked about this. Yeah. Douthat recalls that his reputation in high school was... as, quote, the guy who people could always count on for a political debate on abortion.
Big man on campus.
Guy, you know that guy. That lovely, that beloved party. Character that we all loved. Yeah. The guy who yelled at you while dangling from the top of a fire.
Here comes
flagpole.
The abortion guy. Ah, he's such a goof.
His muffled cries from inside the locker were hilarious to all of us.
Yeah. Just a little taste of Ross's young days. His room is adorned with posters of Audrey Hepburn and Marilyn Monroe, stars from Hollywood's glamour heyday, as well as a towering tribute to Gladiator. Quote, this is the best part. Quote.
Like, he's so gay and he's not even cool. Yeah.
Quote, I think that Russell Crowe's... Oh, I can't even read this. All right.
Do it in the Orson Welles Palma Sunline voice.
You could do it in the Alex Jones voice. Quote, I think that Russell Crowe's evocation of manhood is something all men should aspire to, he explains, particularly when there are such obvious parallels between Rome and the United States, what with the combination of splendor and decadence
and
of
empire. Burning?
And as Matt, I think Matt and I, we talked about, like, decadence, fair enough, but splendor...
Splendor, come on.
I don't know about America's splendor.
Have you been to Golden Corral lately?
Yeah. And then this is a, this is actually from a column he wrote as, like, I think the
Salient, the Harvard Salient, Salient.
Which is a conservative paper. And this is just a little snippet from that. He writes, if I really wanted to offend Harvard Asians, he just imagined he's... I'm picking up in the middle, so, you know, he's in the middle of a...
Wait a minute, isn't that the title of one of OJ's books?
We're not in church yet.
I might sit down and write an article in which I was, well, a tad critical of the Asian community. For instance, I might suggest that there was, let's say, a slight trend toward ethnic self-segregation or a slight proclivity for the sciences over the humanities among Asian Americans. And I might, if I were so inclined, in parentheses, not that anyone would be... get downright nasty and suggest that a large chunk of these self-segregated math and science types are self-absorbed, clannish, and downright weird.
We always joked that this sounds like something that someone from Deadwood would say.
Steve the Drunk. Steve yeah, the Drunk
Steve
would
the
say.
Drunks.
The clannish celestials. Yeah.
Ross's punishment, of course, is being forced to relive the chunky Reese Witherspoon incident.
I think I would like to add he would have to hear about every single one of my sluttiest weekends.
Next up, Josh Barrow. Class of 04. Barrow, his father was a famous Harvard professor.
He still teaches here, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Shout out Robert Barrow.
How did he get in? I don't understand.
Robert Barrow is also one of the silent evil heroes of macroeconomics in the late 20th century. Could be on here.
Barrow has at one point, I think, defended eating pizza with a fork.
Yep.
Yeah.
He chuckled about the lesser Ivies, so if you're from one of them, fuck this guy.
Not the Will and I am.
Elites are elite for a reason. He's just had a lot of really, like, you know...
Well, I mean, I just hate him more than anyone on this list.
He's a big, annoying douche.
I really, really hate him. If the economy worked the way that he says it does, or that the way he would say that it should, he'd be folding sweaters at the Gap.
Yeah, he is.
But instead, he's pissing on the proles, who he thinks aren't as elite as him.
Yeah. He's the poster child of an empty-headed nepotist who constantly praises the technocracy we live in. So my suggestion for a punishment for him is he's forced to change his last name to Smith and try to get a job at AutoZone.
That's good. That's very good.
And last but not least, in the 8th spot, oldie but a goodie, William Bennett, Reagan's former
Anybody
Secretary
remember
of
him?
Education. Yeah.
Yeah. He is a blast from the past because he is really an obsolete figure. He was sort of the house ideologue for the Reagan era ideology of, you know, Christian fundamentalism married with the free market, which is kind of falling apart now. He wrote a bunch of hectoring books about the need for virtue, some incredibly long, boring, propagandistic history books that really unfortunate homeschooled kids have been forced to read by the millions by now. And his greatest crime is not the hypocrisy of the fact that it was recently discovered that the author of The Book of Virtues lost millions of dollars gambling. It was that he lost the money on slot machines, which is the lamest fucking gambling you could possibly do.
He's a grandma gambler.
Yeah. He is. He's a grandma in one of those junket buses from Boca Raton.
That's like if I went bankrupt and I was like, man, I was just living too fast. I made all the in-game purchases on Candy Crush.
Yeah, and I mean, he really is living his punishment right now. And he's watching his beloved GOP, which was the bastion of Christian morality, get turned by Trump into Animal House.
Yeah, that moment when Trump picked up the Bible and went, "You people love this stuff, huh?" Like, that's going to replay in hell for William Bennett over and over.
Okay, Tim Faust, let's break down this bracket.
Test.
All right. All right, the first one, again, sadly, this is more chalk. William Bennett, nobody gives a shit about him anymore. Whereas Charles Murray, people are punching each other on college campuses over him. Charles Murray, hands down.
Yep. No question.
Murray, not just for his crimes, but for his longevity.
Yeah. Next one. Sorry, this is more chalk.
Steamrolled.
Yeah, Barrow's annoying, but like he's not even like a tenth as evil as Bill Kristol.
But if it was between Bill Kristol and Sparrow, that
the
would
pizza
be,
chain?
Yeah, that would actually
that
be,
would
much
be
more
tough.
Difficult.
Sparrow has probably killed more people than Bill Kristol.
Yeah, let's be honest.
Yeah.
All right, this is kind of tough. Well, it's a favorite versus a true contender. I mean,
yeah, okay. This one's really tough. I would go with Ferguson. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you think of that?
I don't think we can let our parental love cloud our judgment here.
No. Yeah. It's Ferguson.
It's
not Ferguson.
Fuck, my mic is fucked.
Just for that voice. God what? Damn it.
I mean, Ferguson essentially writes Holocaust revisionism just under a different empire.
Yeah, that happened on my... What? Yeah, but no. So there's an
indicator. Next up.
Is it that one?
It's the... It's,
oh, thanks.
Bill O'Reilly versus Matt Iglesias.
No, I mean, Iglesias is annoying, but O'Reilly is actually like
a monster.
I would make an argument for Iggy, though, because he has, in fact.
What? Shh.
Because he has, in fact, sort of normalized really horrifying policies for liberals, or had a hand in that.
Yes, but O'Reilly has made literally every white person over 60 insane.
Look, he took,
that's way more people and way more of them vote.
He took shitty people.
Way more of them vote.
Push them shittier. But I think Iggy has dragged maybe people that could have been amenable to better politics into absolute shit garbage ideas.
I think they were just looking for... Shush! I think they're just... They're always on the lookout for justifications for the awfulness they want to do anyway. I think Eagly is just, like, filling the hole.
We should
leave it to the audience,
yeah,
I think.
What do you guys think?
Okay, well, can we get a show of hands for Matt Iglesias? Okay, Bill O'Reilly. I mean, he's been in the news
a lot more
recently.
Nobody voted.
Yeah. And by the way, for everyone who thinks that Bill O'Reilly is such a bad guy because you've been reading all these news stories about them, I know he just went on vacation, but did you know that he invited all of his female employees to go to his beach house with him for a surprise vacation?
And everyone thinks that he's such a rich guy with, you know, a lavish lifestyle. He's actually, it's very small digs, and he's invited all the women to just be in one room with him. He's sharing it with everybody.
It's a timeshare in Cape Cod, and he's down to earth.
He's really generous, too. Like, he loves taking girls to Forever 21 and just, you know, standing outside the dressing room with mirrors on his shoes for some reason.
So, it's all right. Okay. Oh, man.
This is another tough one.
This is like another Duke
Actually
UNC
hard.
Thing. This one is really tough.
This is brutal.
Charles Murray versus Bill Kristol.
I'm going to say...
I can't even make an argument either or.
I mean, you're basically talking foreign policy versus domestic policy.
Yeah, she gets us stuck every time.
I got to say, Kristol, you can indirectly connect him to more bodies than you can connect Murray to indirectly to more bodies.
Yeah, but there's less of a direct connection with Murray.
Yeah.
I'm going to... All right, should we...
Yeah, we got to listen to the audience.
This is fucking hard. Okay. All right, for... Charles Murray, show of hands.
Okay. Ooh.
Bill Kristol.
Bill Kristol. Okay.
Oh, I think that's Bill.
Overwhelming.
Yeah, I think that's Kristol.
Yeah, I mean, it was close, but Bill's going to take it.
Kristol.
We should have said measure your skulls for Charles Murray.
Yeah, we should really weight the votes after taking phrenology charts.
Are there any Hibernians in the audience?
You only get half a vote.
Yeah. Okay. Niall Ferguson versus Bill O'Reilly. Again, I can't.
Just, again, more domestic versus.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
But once again, it's like how many people have read a Niall Ferguson book?
Yeah.
How many people have read a Bill O'Reilly book?
Well, no one in here.
Wow. I've got a hand in the back.
He's like the Velvet Underground, though. The stuff that came
from it's like
it was
only 1,000
more influence.
Only 1,000 people bought his book, but every one of them started a war.
Yeah.
He's the fucking Velvet Underground.
Yep.
It's O'Reilly. Come on, we know.
Well, let's
wait,
vote.
No, no,
let's
I think
vote.
We, this guy's
let's
got
let him up.
All right,
leave it to the people.
All right, show of hands for Niall Ferguson.
Wow. I mean, but
he actually taught here, though. I mean, Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly.
Okay, okay. There we go.
There
we go. Celebrity, you know, wins every time.
Oh man.
God.
Bill on Bill.
The battle of the Bills. But both should be butchered. Woo, zing. Okay.
I'm gonna lay out the logic here for me at least is that similar to the Murray face-off.
Just get a head start.
Hold that thought. Similar to the Murray
face-off. That's why he's the best, folks.
Yeah.
Tim Faust.
Is that, yes, Crystal obviously connected with a whole load of horrible foreign policy shit that cost people a lot of lives. But like Murray, O'Reilly, I think, is more directly, like, putting his finger on the brains of people that assigns him a greater responsibility than Crystal, who is a cheerleader, but maybe not, like, a sole... like world historical influence on
yeah
people.
I mean
here's
they
the thing I mean you had presidents reading the New York Times every day. I think you can argue okay my grandparents yeah Bill O'Reilly made them assholes but they don't have power over anything.
Yeah, but now Trump watches O'Reilly every night. Grandpa has now become the president.
Maybe at one point Crystal could have swayed, but O'Reilly and Fox News, they just have so much more reach and power.
I have to make the case for Bill Crystal, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to cheat a little bit. This is my case for Bill Crystal. Look at that. Look at his fucking smug, dumb face.
Yeah. Also.
Look at the way he's just putting his finger cocked on his head quizzically. Look at that.
This is emotionalism. This is a rigorous argumentation.
He still has that same face. His eyes are just closed.
Yep.
All right, we got to throw it to the audience again, I think.
Okay, can we get a show of hands for Bill Crystal?
Oh, we know it.
Okay.
Show of hands for Bill O'Reilly.
All right.
Okay.
I mean,
I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong, but...
Yeah.
All right. I mean, at the end of the day...
Democracy is a sham.
At the end of the day...
Hey, who in this room got into Harvard? Them or you?
At the end of the day, William Crystal only helped assault a country. Right. O'Reilly, every woman at News Corp.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Bill O'Reilly takes it the media wonk region, which brings us to our last region, the boner region.
Boing.
This is sort of like a grab bag. These are people who are sort of like a miscellaneous. They don't quite fit into any of the other categories.
They're like the non-sporting group at Westminster.
Leading off the boner region in the number one spot, Alan Dershowitz.
It's the Dersh. By the way, anything we say about him, he cannot sue us for because we have retained him as counsel. He's a really good lawyer.
Yeah, and also I eat pizza with Dersh all the time.
Allegedly.
Allegedly eat pizza. We have to be careful here. He's notoriously litigious.
Yeah.
His crimes are, of course, dedicating his life to helping rich men kill their wives under the guise of defending our constitutional liberties and the right to a fair trial. Generally, I mean, like, all the Israel stuff, too, he's just, like, generally a chief apologist for, like, everything Israel does for in America. I just want to make clear, though, these are his crimes. What is not his crime, though, and I want to be very clear about this, not a crime. This is not why he's in here. Anything he may or may not have done on the private plane of his good friend Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah.
Other people have alleged that Jeffrey was just running a teenage prostitution ring with his in private island in Plain. Dersh denies this, and I believe him.
Yeah, I mean, look, people said that the name of the plane was the Lolita Express, but since when was it a crime to like a book?
Yeah.
The man's a reader.
Witch hunt.
So anything said about what Alan did or did not do on Jeffrey Epstein's plane is complete hearsay. It's not admissible. And more importantly, we can't be sued for bringing it up.
Mm-hmm. Because we didn't.
Yep. Alan's punishment. Klaus von Bülow is made his live-in nurse and carefully administers all of his home health care. Yeah. Google it. Come on, people. Number two, Natalie Portman.
Did we get the right... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay. Crime, I mean, okay, like, look, she's not really evil. This is The Miscellaneous, but she is certainly overrated as an actress. Yeah. However, when I was looking this up, this is too good not to include. I found this quote from Alan Dershowitz about Natalie Portman being his student.
I think it was just a cartoon boner noise.
This is the boner region. This is Alan on Natalie Portman. She was in my seminar called Neuropsychology and the Law, and I didn't know who she was because her name was Natalie Hirschlag, he said, referring to Portman's birth name. It was a few weeks into the semester that I learned she was an actress, but she was a terrific student.
How to damn someone with faint praise. What do you think of Natalie Portman? She was a great student.
Well, check this out. Portman's paper on new methods of lie detection earned her an A+ from Dershowitz, the highest grade in the class. Talk about grade inflation. Jesus Christ.
A+.
I didn't even think they gave that outside of, like, kindergarten. We talked a lot about her career, he says.
Oh, wow. I bet he loved the movie Leon the Professional for some reason. It is good direction. He likes good movies.
Another weird part about that is it said that the paper that she got an A+ on was on new methods of lie detection, which is like, isn't that a hokum bullshit science to begin with? Like, we've got a new way to extract false confessions from suspects.
A+. It involves midichlorians.
Again, not going to be too hard on Natalie, but her punishment is that she is forced to discuss Star Wars canon with Virgil at length.
That's not a punishment.
I said I wasn't being too hard on her. Number three. Oh, this is a good one. Phyllis Schlafly.
Yeah.
Oh.
Schlafly.
Schlafly.
We wanted to bring some, you know, real gender diversity to the bracket game. But just some good notes on Phyllis. Here's a good quote. By getting married, the woman has consented to sex, and I don't think you can call it rape. Sexual harassment on the job is not a problem for the virtuous woman, except in the rarest of cases. Yeah, somewhat ironically, worked up until her last gasp of life. She was a career woman. The last thing she ever wrote was a piece calling for a ban on foreign-born players from Major League Baseball. She's still mad about Jackie Robinson.
This was actually the best thing that I found out about Phyllis Schlafly. Like, she died recently, R.I.P. the last thing that she ever wrote was this sentence. It is time to cut off visas for foreign baseball players and return our national pastime to Americans.
With my last breath, I curse the Latinos. Shocker, she was a St. Louis Cardinals fan.
We had a good punishment for her, but she did kind of live out her own punishment. I mean, the thing is, she did all that campaigning for conservatism because she wanted a position with Reagan's campaign, and as some prominent, it was Steinem. Steinem actually said, poor Phyllis, she Uncle Tommed herself right out of a job.
She's sort of the Grendel's mother to every white-wing ghoul in America. But her punishment, of course, is that she finally breaks the glass ceiling, keeping women out of the deepest circle of hell. Number four. Ted Kaczynski, class of 62. This one's pretty quick. His crime?
Being right about everything.
He called it.
Read it. Read it. It's good.
His punishment? None. He said, let my man out. Free. Free Ted. Number five, Andy Borowitz. Crimes. I'm just going to read a few of them right now. Putin angrily resigns from Trump's reelection campaign. White House denies any ties to United States.
That's absurd.
Trump Trump breaks world record for unconstitutional travel bans.
What does that mean? That's not a reference to anything.
I want to know how much he makes. It should be exposed.
Obama denies wiretapping Trump, quote, like I'd want to hear more from that fool.
I had to go to the bathroom, but I sprinted back mid-piss because this is my biggest comedic influence.
Just two more. Trump orders all White House phones covered in tinfoil. And last but not least, FBI to special order a pair of tiny handcuffs. Hey, the Smilex gas is being piped into Science Hall D
party
at the moment.
Man, party man.
Party man. Andy's punishment is having his parents and older relatives share our tweets with him by email and Facebook. It's got something funny. You love it. It's political and it's comedy. Like that's what you do.
Trump signs up for Fox fake news.
The handcuffs were tiny because Trump has small hands.
Before Matt has a stroke. Moving on. Sheryl Sandberg, class of 91. Again, I don't want to, lean too hard on this one. The crime is Facebook. And the quote here, it says, if you're offered a seat on a rocket ship, don't ask what seat, just get on.
No!
He does that.
No! I'm not getting on.
Well, yeah, no. Virgil, you say that, but this quote was referring to the Challenger.
Yeah, she said that to Christine McAuliffe, I remember.
Again, it's Facebook and just generally the sort of whole
lean
brand
in feminism.
Lean in
that
feminism.
Whole
we don't need to belabor the point
being
too much.
Being my ex.
Her punishment, having her empathy chip activated. Number 7, Amy Bishop, class of 93.
Yeah.
Does anyone know who this person is?
He's cut.
Okay. Cool. Amy's crime was killing 3 and wounding 3 more in a shooting at the University of Alabama, Huntsville. Charged with 1 count of capital murder and 3 counts of attempted murder. She pled guilty to the charges to avoid the death penalty. But like Ted, she's an outlier in this entire bracket in that she's, among with him, the only person actually to be punished for her crimes. Yeah. So anything further would be unnecessary.
Yeah.
Finally, rounding out the boner region and the entire tournament in the 8th spot. You already know.
You know who it is.
You know who it is. It's my man Jared Kushner in the... Woo!
I do. Ooh, I hope this isn't... Final 4 isn't the other type of final. The solution kind.
I guess the main thing to note about Jared, I mean, we all know he's like the princeling to our current president. He's currently in charge of our Middle East policy, Iraq, and making the government run as efficiently as a business. We'll see how that goes. But his dad did give $3 million to Harvard so he could go here.
Anybody else have that happen?
Really?
Anyone else know that feel?
Really? You should be thanking his organ thief dad because that was kind of a gift to you, the institution, gracing you with Jared.
Yeah. All that donation was tax exempt as well. Because that's how charitable it was. His punishment, finally, being cucked by both Justin Trudeau and his father-in-law. Okay, the last one. Tim, let's do it.
Guys, I honestly think we could have a genuine upset
this
here.
This really could be.
Because, yes, Dershowitz is a parody of a human being, but Jared Kushner basically runs everything right now. He's the most powerful man in America because the president is watching cartoons on the toilet.
It should be a vote.
I'm still going with Dersh.
I would say Dersh.
I would say Dersh as well, but let's throw
see,
it
this
out.
Is all, this Kushner. Is all about, like, this is all about, you know, who do you want on your team? Do you want a veteran who had a great run, but he's sort of over the hill and you got to pay a lot for a contract for him? Or do you want to take a flyer on a cheap draft pick with incredibly high upside? Motherfucker could be the end of human civilization.
Yeah.
You can't say that about Alan Dershowitz.
I will say Alan Dershowitz is still in the mix. He recently helped exonerate Sean Spicer for his Holocaust Center comment.
It's true.
By saying, quote, you know, I'm going to let him get him a pass on this one, saying, of course, of the Anne Frank Center, it's a very minor institution, and I wouldn't worry too much about what they have to say.
That's like a hood pass.
Yeah.
Dershowitz is just quoted in newspaper articles saying some brutal inanity about Israel. Kushner is someone who actually goes to the fucking Middle East, puts on a bulletproof vest and his fucking boat shoes, and tromps around.
Think about this.
I say Kushner.
Think about this. Jared Kushner, 3 years ago, he was only known as being one of the dumbest men in New York media and real estate, which is already amazing. Now, I'd say at least 1,000 people have died because of him. Think about it.
Yeah. I got to go with Kushner. I don't know. Do you want to give it to the audience or what?
Yeah. We'll sort up to the vote. Show of hands for the Dersh. Okay.
Hell yeah.
All right, fuck it.
It's over the hill, Dersh.
Yeah. Ivy
first
League.
Big
you're smart.
Upset of a number one seed.
This is a
Jared
Cinderella
knocks
story
off
in the making.
Alan Dershowitz.
Also, he stole my name. Fuck that guy.
The original Kushbaum.
Okay. This one is next up is actress Natalie Portman versus triple murderer Amy Bishop. I'm not even going to put this one to a vote. It's Natalie Portman advancing to the next round.
We will sign no treaty, Senator. That line has done more damage to more people than Amy Bishop's gun.
It's true. It's true. Next up,
only
competing
shot faculty, so it was a victimless crime.
True.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's too far.
Oh, we got a lot of grad students.
This is a sort of a matchup of competing visions of feminism.
Yeah.
Phyllis Schlafly versus Sheryl Sandberg. Sorry, this was
easy.
Yeah,
this is Schlafly.
It's
Schlafly.
It's Schlafly. Yeah. Even though she's dead, it's still she lives on.
She basically lived forever.
She lives on. She
single-handedly ended the ERA. She killed a constitutional amendment.
Yeah. Like, yeah, Sandberg just wrote a kind of annoying book.
About Dominicans.
Yeah. Finally, Ted Kaczynski versus Andy Borowitz.
Borowitz.
It's Borowitz.
Borowitz.
Oh, man. Okay, I did not see this matchup coming.
I've got butterflies.
Yeah, this is Jared Kushner versus Natalie Portman.
I think the same logic applies to Kushner. His ceiling is just so high. He's a player you can dream on.
Yeah.
You know what? The prequels weren't that bad. I mean, they weren't. I'm sorry, they
Let's
weren't.
Let's not go nuts. Hold on a minute.
They weren't.
I'm not saying the prequels were not a crime. They were. They're just not as big a crime as the impending war with North Korea.
I could even see Jared Kushner making an offensive reggae character in CGI for his own enjoyment.
I don't even think we need to throw this one. I can feel the mood in the room. Kush is advancing to the. Next up, Phyllis Schlafly versus Andy fucking Borowitz.
Do we want to do a vote?
All right, I want to see a show of hands.
Yeah.
Phyllis Schlafly. Jesus.
Ooh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. She killed the
Borowitz. You're all men. You don't want to look sexist, but for fuck's sake, you hear those headlines.
Andy Borowitz?
Yeah. Schlafly had more.
Yeah, Schlafly won.
Yeah.
Oh, Schlafly.
Vocal minority for Borowitz, though. I appreciate you.
Yeah, they didn't have the numbers, but they had the passion.
Yeah.
Again,
this is another classic contest between, you know, track record. Yeah, but it was such a long period.
Before, between dead and living, the most classic contest.
Yeah, but
yeah. Yeah.
The thing is, Schlafly was the ultimate fail daughter. She could never really get in a position of power because she's like, women should be in the kitchen. And they were like, okay. And she's like, shit, again, every time. Yeah.
Kushner is probably going to live longer than Phyllis.
What, in the irradiated mole land?
Yes.
Yes.
The subterranean place from 12 monkeys that we're all going to be living in 16 months.
Phyllis's son gave us Conservapedia, the creepy Wikipedia edited exclusively by Christian homeschool kids.
Yeah, yeah, it rules.
Yeah.
All right, we got to throw it to the audience, I think.
Okay, yeah.
It's Kush.
Hands up for Kush.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Okay, we now have a final four. All right.
look at the thing.
Okay. That's why Canon is the best.
Yeah. Okay. The winner of the War Criminal Region is going to face off with the Robert Barron Region. Henry Kissinger versus Lloyd Blankfein. Holy shit.
Wow.
We promised you a Final Four that was going to be really fucking evil. And this is delivering.
Yeah,
Henry Kissinger is still the overall number one.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
But man,
Lloyd Blankfein had a strong showing coming out of the Robert Barron region.
He made some upsets. He blew through. Yeah, he's clearly got a little bit of momentum.
Blankfein versus Henry Kissinger. We cannot decide this on ourselves by ourselves. Show of hands for Lloyd Blankfein.
Holy shit!
Wow. Show of hands for Henry Kissinger. Okay.
Okay.
Blow out.
Duke?
The chalk don't lie. Duke is there every year.
I agree with
you. Woo! He shows up. That's the thing about Kissinger. He is carried in a sedan chair in his monstrous cartilaginous form from talk show to talk show. All right, here we go.
This is so stupid.
All right, so this is actually another one where you've got an interesting interplay because O'Reilly is part of the reason that we have Kushner. Like, it's sort of a passing of the baton thing.
It's
but
chicken egg thing.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, like, but at the end of the day, who was a better baseball player, Hank Aaron or Barry Bonds?
I don't know.
Those are the only two baseball players I know, so.
I understand sports metaphors that we're what we're doing now, but I think we're kind of stuck in it. There's a mouthpiece and then a seat of power thing, but we cannot deny the influence of ideology.
Here's what I'm going to say. Is that Kushner hasn't actually ended the world yet, okay? He's in the position to. He could. If we do this next year as cockroach mutants or whatever, then maybe he'll win it.
There's always next year.
But right now, I think O'Reilly, as a person, deserves more of the top spot than Kushner does.
I think this is O'Reilly's going to be his last go around, honestly.
Yeah.
He's a titan.
Yeah.
He's a titan.
I mean, he might get canceled. I mean, he's really on a precipice here. And like if you can look back on a career of just
Here's a question.
Stirring.
Do you think Jared would have been able to survive all of the fucking shit that O'Reilly has survived at Fox and not gotten fired?
Yes.
No.
You think so?
No.
Yes.
I think Trump would can.
Well, hold on a minute. No, I mean, like,
he would have bought his way into it.
Do you think Trump would can somebody for sexual assaults?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
No, but the thing is that, okay, O'Reilly, like, worked his way to that position. Kushner has just glided on, like, this big wad of money his whole life.
He's
That's been with a cushion.
He's in the cushion.
He's been cushioned. Kushner's been cushioned by money his entire life. He can't fuck up, basically.
Right.
Whereas O'Reilly has, like, got to that position. Because, like, if Kushner was in the O'Reilly position and didn't have the money, you'd never know who the fuck he was.
So is that a pro for O'Reilly?
I think it's for O'Reilly,
Well, one's
killer.
Yeah, he's bootstraps.
One thing, I did make an offer to Bill O'Reilly
in
case he does get canned.
Yeah. Oh, for our show?
Yes.
Yeah. Seventh mic coming soon.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we got to put it to the audience.
Yeah, to the audience. Hands up for Jared Kushner.
I told you.
He came in with so much pop, too.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Wow. A lot of you have had a lot of ruined holidays.
The lion. Like, the lion Bill O'Reilly.
This leaves us the
And as is often the case in Final Fours, anticlimactic championship match.
It really is.
What are the seeds? Kissinger was one, O'Reilly was four?
O'Reilly was a four.
That's not terrible.
It's pretty good.
It wasn't chalk.
Yeah. It wasn't straight chalk, but we got Henry Kissinger versus Bill O'Reilly. It's Kissinger, right?
Obviously.
It's got to be.
There's no need
Henry
to talk
Kissinger.
About this.
Again, true to form, like Duke, the number one seed overall wins out.
Yep.
And it's because he's really fucking evil.
Yep.
So there you have it. Harvard's most evil person. This is now legally binding. Henry Kissinger will be kicked out of an airplane into a volcano.
Yep. Yeah.
Give yourself a big hand.
But not before we present him with a handsome diploma declaring him Harvard's most evil alumni. Yeah.
Where is our honorary diploma? Can we bring those down?
Yeah. Yeah, someone bring it down, please.
Can you give it to me in like a fake science, like lie detectors or meteorology?
So, guys, any closing thoughts? Guess not.
Yeah, none.
Oh, I've got one. Veritas.
There you have it.
Harvard University, Rich Apo Trap House, thank you so much for hanging out
with us.
Thank
you, guys.
Okay.